Hello and welcome to episode 129 of the Nerds Assemble podcast.
This week, is it time out for parents that allow their underage kids to play 18-rated video games? Nerds.
Hi, I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
I'm sorry we have no Cookie this week, but our wish is with him and we hope, you know, he gets better soon, because, like, that's just nasty, man.
Yeah, didn't he have run-in with Ermac?
Yes. Yes. Don't have run-ins with Ermac. It's bad. Bad for your health.
I'm just going to nod and smile.
Probably as for ever,
you can probably find notes for this episode. No, not probably. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also comment. If I find links to social account, you could just get in touch with us right now and just email us at via contact at nerdassemble.co.uk. Or you could just try tweeting us at nerdspodcast. I have just drunk a mug of blackcurrant tea. The heat's... I feel a bit funny now.
You're feeling a bit funny from the heat of the blackcurrant. Is it too strong for you?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I'm just going to turn the heater off as well. It's too warm.
I'm just going to make a comment about southerners. but just to myself, so it's not audible.
okay.
I'm just wondering what that black is on the keyboard.
and other such noises. So let's hit you with some news, like, just before we start.
Well, let's not hit them with the news.
Maybe we should. Maybe it'll sink in. I'm just saying, you know, there's got to be some advantages.
Is it spiky news? You know, news with nails in?
Not quite, but...
That sounds like a, you know, kind of a an already existing kind of hardcore kind of, this is nails news or something.
I was going to say that just before we start recording...
Screwfix Direct.
The Hollywood Reporter reported, you know, as they do, the news that Disney are now looking to produce a live-action version of Mulan. Because as the Hollywood Reporter put it, on the heels of the magical success of Disney's live-action Cinderella, the studios are eyeing another live-action retelling... Mulan. Disney brought a script by writing team Elizabeth Martin and Lauren Hynek that centers on the Chinese legend of Hua Mulan, the female warrior who was the main character in Disney's 1998 animated film.
My question, how sanitized will it be?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it kind of made sense making it an animated film because you could tone things down and the goofiness made sense, but, I mean... It's a freaking story about going to war, for Pete's sake.
It's not just that, but I mean, it's not just like the main character that is Chinese. It's like the entire cast will have to be Chinese.
I've got an idea, a crazy idea. Why not just give the money to a Chinese production company and let them do it?
You know, that would be actually, you know, technically a sound financial idea, because then it would guarantee...
That's cool as well.
Yeah, but it would actually guarantee that the film actually gets shown in China for definite, and, you know, help resolve any issues of whitewashing that could potentially happen.
Mm.
Not that Hollywood has done that lately.
Hmm. Yeah. So,
I think I've got a slight confession. I think Mulan was one of those films that Disney bought out kind of after, you know, I was like... kid and kind of moved out of like Disney.
Well, if Mulan came out in 1998, then you would have just started being a teenager.
So yeah, I don't think I've actually watched Mulan.
I'm not watching any cartoons, they're for kids.
I watched Mulan maybe once all the way through, and that was as a teenager several years after it had been released, and it was okay. I don't think it dealt with the subject matter effectively enough. I was kind of reminded of how they didn't manage to deal with the subject matter of Pocahontas effectively enough. That was kind of the parallel I kind of drew in my head, because it's like, Pocahontas, a tale about two groups of people going to war. Mulan, a tale about women, again, also being in the middle of groups of people going to war.
It's cuddly war.
Yes. I mean, talking dragons.
I mean, the interesting thing is that from what I've heard from stuff like Maleficent is that they have changed the stories by quite a bit to make it more, you know, palatable to, you know, kind of the well, in today's market, you know, you wouldn't be able to get away with the, you know, the crap that you could get away with in even the late 90s. You know, this whole, well, obviously not necessarily with the case of Mulan, but this whole kind of women should be saved by the men and that type of thing. So I'm just kind of wondering how they're going to adapt the story at all, or if they are.
It might pass the Bechdel test, maybe, at the end of the day. Maybe that's what we can hope for.
Is there a second female character in Mulan?
That's a good freaking point. Because it can't pass
the Bechdel test.
Maybe.
No more than one female character.
As we all know, ancient Chinese society was structured like a hive, and there was only one female, and...
I can't even remember if Mulan's mum actually featured in the original animation. I know her dad did, because that was part of the conflict.
She can't have been in, because as we know from the Assassin's Creed Unity developer, women are very hard to animate. I'm just digging these back up. So Prime cuts up bullshit.
I think rather than Disney, you know, revisiting existing IPs because, oh, it'll cost them less money because they can be stingy buggers at times, maybe they should try to make something kind of new for once. I mean, you could go with the very postmodernist arguments that all the stories have been told and we're only regurgitating that which has already been told. At the same time, though, there's, you know... new stories and there's regurgitating stuff for the sake of saving money.
That argument has been done to death by now.
I know.
So, you know, we know that people would rather go watch, you know, mindless Hollywood flicks rather than like remakes and reimaginings and stuff like that, rather than actually sitting down to watch an original one,
I think what makes the Mulan situation worse is because we know it's Disney. We know they're not great for representations of ethnicity. And they're wanting to make a live-action Mulan. It just makes my toes curl, basically.
Yeah. It's just give it to a Chinese company.
Bearing in mind that you can obviously guarantee that the audio will also be in English, because I doubt if, you know, a live-action Disney film would... you know, kind of go the way of subtitles.
They'd have enough money to get bilingual actors in or people, you know, to replace some of the cast.
Yeah.
But, you know, they could afford to do two versions.
Mm.
Especially if they did make it in China, because then it would overall be cheaper anyway.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I'm kind of surprised that they haven't tried to do like a live-action Aladdin first. So I could just imagine, like, with, you know, special effects and whatnot, they...
Oh, but that would bring its own host of problems culturally at the moment.
That's true.
I mean, the Prince of Persia film, is it film or films?
I think it's just the one.
That came out just before things really started to get a bit awkward on the representation front. I would say trying to do... I mean, come on, Prince... Aladdin's kind of set... Oh, where is it? So it's from the 1001 Arabian Nights.
Yeah.
But which country or sort of area is that mainly from in the Middle East? Is it former... Persia? Because that's awkward.
It's either Iran or Iraq, that kind of...
Well, if it's Iran, that's not great, because if anyone still wants to have, like, Jasmine not covered up... I mean, because... Jasmine's outfit is unrealistic even by the century that the story's meant to take place in. Like, she wouldn't have been that uncovered around men.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it would have been a whole burqa setup, but she still wouldn't have been that uncovered. So then it means that you'd be doing a lot, but then you'd have to represent it. Oh, God, it's just a dangerous mess, is what I'm trying to say.
As an aside, just there. With historical films, I would really love them to be made in the languages of the time.
Hmm. I mean, I have to admit, I think one of my favourite...
That's not going to happen,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's just me being an arse.
Well, one of my favourite video games, it was actually Eternal Darkness, and if anybody's played that, they will recognise that at the beginning of the game, you know, when you play as Pius, they are actually speaking their native language, and it kind of slowly gets automatically translated.
It's speaking in Latin, and it slowly turns
exactly.
into English.
So, kind of acknowledging the fact that, you know, this is kind of an interpretation of what's going on, because it's been, you know, kind of the language spoken has been, you know, redone for, you know, our audience. That kind of thing, I kind of like the idea of.
But all ancient Romans and such spoke very plummy English. That's what the films have taught me.
But, it's a way of kind of acknowledging the fact that it wasn't originally in English, but it's a way of kind of making the audience understand that we're translating it for you.
I prefer that, but it still annoys me slightly when they start changing it to English in films. But you know, unless it's, you know, as part of the it's a translation thing, you know, like in Assassin's Creed kind of thing.
I think the interesting thing about Prince of Persia is that, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal has obviously kind of played kind of a prince of that kind of area. Meanwhile, he's also played a character in Jarhead. Not that I've seen Jarhead, but I just know that he's in that, which, you know, I think is kind of set around that from the opposite perspective. Well, not necessarily opposite perspective, but from kind of in... Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. Exodus, blah blah, that Scott released around Christmas had a lot of criticism leveled at it because of the casting choices, and I'm just saying, you know.
I mean, presumably it was same with, what was it, 300 or 3,000 or?
There was 300, but 300, then but then it was sort of 300 is far more fictional tale.
Very, very Zack Snyder-y and stuff, and it's like,
whereas
it also has like American actors in and stuff.
Whereas
and
Exodus Gerald Butler, that was basically the story of I think I want to move on to another story now.
That's fair enough.
Retroid, what was that thing you were telling us about the game that's a sequel to a thing that got converted to a thing, and what's going on?
So, well, in days of old, in 1984, a game was written based on Bruce Lee. It wasn't based on any of his films. It was just, you know, the licensed, you know, version of the character. It was a platform game that had a little bit of combat in, and it was, you know, tiny little figures, you know, jumping around the screen. You had to collect lanterns to unlock doors, and everything was a bit of a maze, and it, you know, was quite elaborate for the time. Now, see, that was 1984. So, you know, I played it, completed it, I got a few mates who had to go, oh yeah, Bruce Lee, remember that on the Spectrum, or, you know, in my case, 64. and then in 2013, Bruno R. Marcos decided to do Bruce Lee 2 for Windows. Now, it wasn't, you know, a modern reimagining or anything like that. What he did was a Windows game designed to look like the Commodore 64 and Amstrad CPC, Atari 800, so, you know, 8-bit color, low-resolution machines. And, you know, people liked it. You know, they really enjoyed it, but I didn't bother with it because I thought, well, it's not really an authentic thing. I like the fact he did it, and I was going to get around to playing it at some point, but, you know, it just didn't seem right. However, it's now been converted to the actual Commodore 64, and it was released this weekend at a Scene demo party for free. So everyone can, you know, play this unofficial sequel that's got, you know, various, you know, it's an entirely new game. Extra little features like your little Bruce Lee can now swim. And, you know, all these kinds of things where, you know, it couldn't before. It's just you know, it was entirely on dry land, but now it's sort of semi-expanded like that. And I was playing it over the weekend on my Xperia Play, and yeah, it's really bloody good. It's hard, as you would expect a game from that era to be, but it's hard in a, well, that makes sense, I screwed up way. But yeah, I recommend everyone has a look, you know, if they're into, older games. So in this way, you can either get the Commodore 64 version, which, as I say, was released, or if you just Google for Bruce Lee 2, you can also download the free Windows or Linux versions from this bloke's website. And yeah, it's quite good fun. Okay. And I've been enjoying it quite a bit.
Okay.
Still not finished it, because it's a hard bastard. But it has a screen where you have to kick a tiny version of Chuck Norris in the face.
Brilliant.
And then collect a cat.
Fabulous.
And that unlocks a door.
Fabulous.
So
the cat unlocks the door.
Well, I don't know. You just collect the cat and the door unlocks and say, hooray.
Maybe it was based on like feline retina scanners.
Or it's like a version of the Golden Idol scene from the start of Raiders of the Lost Ark, except it was a cat.
Yeah, could be that too.
No giant boulder though. Yet.
I'm gonna move on to some less happy video games news. As assholes of the internet yet again reared their ugly, stupid faces and managed to convince one of the producers from Mortal Kombat 10 that they no longer wanted to be on Twitter. And so Sean Himrick has decided to leave Twitter after receiving threats against his wife and young daughter.
That's just
threats of violence and sexual violence.
Of course, because that's the go-to, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's like, it's just, I think what's particular, because I'm looking at the story on MCV, MCV, as they reported it. And apparently, Twitter meant to have been working on improving the situation of dealing with abusive trolls like this.
I wonder why.
Yeah, but apparently it doesn't seem that the situation has improved. Quoting MCB, in December, EA CEO Peter Moore was told by the service that a user who told him that he hoped his children would die was not violating Twitter rules.
Please explain how.
Yeah, so I don't know if any, it's not clear whether or not the user account that was responsible for the offensive tweets has been dealt with. However, yeah, it's just, why?
It's like, what was it? It was a Call of Duty patch, which was another one that came to mind, where they changed some timings on one of the guns.
To make it less ridiculous.
Yeah, and they got death threats. And he's like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Well, the thing is, though, is that, you know, there's obviously some people out there that will turn around and say, oh, well, obviously we were only joking. We wouldn't really do that kind of thing. Well, no, it's scary enough when some random person says that, because there are people out there that would do that kind of thing. It's not nice to think about, and they're a massive, massive minority, but there are nutcases out there that would do that.
Yeah, let's see the authorities, take... You know, the same kind of attitude with it's probably not going to happen if, you know, someone, you know, shouts, I've got a bomb on this bus or whatever, or, you know, or on a train or, you know, anything like that. Let's just see what happens to the person involved.
Absolutely.
Because you can't really take it, it's probably not true, because it only has to be true once.
Yeah.
So,
I personally don't get why people do like threats, especially like sexual threats as well. I mean, that to me it's bad enough threatening to hit somebody or assault them or whatever, but actually having sexual threats, that's just mental.
it's just the go-to. It's they want to get, you know, go for the worst thing they can think of.
Mm.
And that's what they keep going for. I do wonder if there's any crossover with a certain other bunch of reprehensible assholes.
The Tories, probably.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Even Duncan Smith, you know, wanker. He's big into his things.
He's big into his things.
Yeah, I'll move on to another story now. So the future of the Constantine TV series is still not 100% set in stone. Currently, the show's been, is it on hiatus, pretty much?
Yeah, I think
it's in a weird kind of limbo. It has been cancelled, but currently the those mainly involved in producing it are holding out for somebody to come forward with some decent scripts to basically, I think, convince them to continue producing the show.
Yeah, and I think is it they're meant to be kind of coming up with like a plot line for like season two.
Yeah, basically. So it's not been cancelled, but apparently nobody's come up with any grab them by the balls ideas yet, apparently.
If only there were already some pre-existing works they could go to.
I know, like 300 issues of it, plus several, you know, standalone stories.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe the people behind the TV series are just busy looking through the comics.
I would say that they shouldn't look to the new 52 version for inspiration, because that's, that's a pretty disappointing pile of crap. But, yeah.
What do you really think?
I don't think the disc set is available in the UK yet, because I refuse to end up with subscribe to more than one streaming service at a time.
Oh, no. Especially when so many shows kind of cross over between the two.
Or Amazon just doesn't have enough of the variety for me to want to consider it, or they've got too much crap amongst all the good stuff.
Well, the problem I have with streaming services is that I bled Netflix dry of a lot of the things I want to watch. And we only had Amazon Prime for about a month, and it seemed to have more movies I might want to watch. But when it came to actually actual series, it seemed very poor in comparison.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like neither of them are perfect, but I'm still sticking with Netflix as a better one.
We've had kind of very limited experience with Amazon Prime, basically just over a friend's house. And,
but that was a diabolical evening.
Yeah, sometimes it's like we search for something, and it kind of came up, but it didn't allow us to play any episodes because, oh, it wasn't, you know, kind of for streaming. It's like, what? Why have you got it listed if it's not for streaming?
So they had a really annoying habit of having stuff come up in the search, but it either wasn't included as a stream, or, yeah, it was, you know, something to buy, you know, one way or another.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for Constantine to basically come out on box set before I go near it. I'm going to move on to one still comics-y related story. It's been pretty much confirmed that Hugh Jackman will be making his final Wolverine appearance in the second sort of Wolverine standalone movie, which is due out for release in 2017.
There's going to be another... Oh, God.
That was agreed last year, but it's looking like it will probably be his last appearance as Wolverine.
Which is strange, because I've heard stuff since which has claimed that he would kind of continue playing Wolverine until he died, pretty much.
That was like some of the sort of boisterous comments he made before Christmas, but I think realism's begun to set in at this point. And while I'd be sad to see him go from the role, perhaps, apart from I think the X-Men franchise maybe needs a bit of a rest to some degree, or at least it needs to concentrate on the sort of Michael Fassbender and what's-his-face
actors. What's-his-face.
Yeah.
More. So,
well, isn't that meant to be happening with X-Men Apocalypse?
Yeah, but also, what's-her-face that plays Mystique said that she's...
Jennifer Lawrence, yeah.
Has also said in the past week or so that she's giving up the role of Mystique after Apocalypse. So...
doesn't make me wonder.
Yeah.
Which is a pity, because actually she made the character more interesting. Because wasn't Mystique in... Yeah, Mystique was in the previous three.
Yeah.
Yes, and didn't manage to get virtually any characterization in whatsoever.
Yeah, there was no characterization there whatsoever.
But, I don't know, I think from at this point with the X-Men movies is that, they're not obviously going to get tied in with the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe anytime soon. So they're reaching a point of continuation where it's actually getting less and less interesting because all they're going to do is rehash the same storylines that the comics end up with when they're disconnected from the rest of the Marvel Universe anyway.
Oh, what happens if the government decides to ban mutants again?
And send something after them.
Yeah, or there's something that decides to wipe out mutants again.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the description of the first three films, definitely.
I mean,
yeah, it is.
The X-Men comics obviously do vary, but the reason they vary is because they then have crossovers with the rest of the universe.
Mm.
So they kind of quiet down the regular sort of arcs that the X-Men tend to go through again and again. They interrupt the rest of the universe. Something crazy happens, and then they kind of shift back into the usual kind of system.
Which is kind of funny, because obviously, especially with the cartoon series, Spider-Man and the X-Men did cross over quite a bit. And it's like, in X-Men, the world hates the X-Men because they're mutants and evil and whatnot. Oh, but in Spider-Man, everybody loves Spider-Man because he's a mutant and he's a superhero.
But they never called him a mutant Spider-Man.
No, but I mean, he got mutated.
What do you want me to mention? Thingy. Yeah. Unfortunately, the I can't remember his name. You made the story disappear.
I was told to.
The co-creator of Lobo, the DC character, who had been in a coma since 2012 after being involved in a hit and run accident, Roger Sleifer, has you just went past it.
All right, sorry.
Has passed away, unfortunately, in the last few days, which is horrible. Just thought.
I used to read Lobo. That was quite a good little book.
Because we had the graphic novel group fourth birthday party, and one of the games that we played was the comic equivalent of like sticking a name on your head, and you have to kind of guess. The name that's stuck on your head, and I got stuck with Lobo.
Yeah, I didn't pick that for you.
No.
And well, I knew...
You never picked any of them. No, I wrote down most of them.
But I knew you were not going to get that in a million years.
No.
So.
I mean, did I ask whether he appeared in a game? Because technically he has appeared in... either Injustice or...
It would have been
DC versus Mortal Kombat.
I'm pretty sure he might have appeared in a 16-bit... game as well.
Mm.
Not as a main character, obviously, but as an extra.
That is the news for this week. I think I'm going to move us on to what we've been up to. I think Retrog and I need to talk about something.
What's that then?
Are you a Dean or a Sam girl?
Yeah.
Am I a girl, for a start? Well, I like them both, not in that way. I have been watching Supernatural, the first half of the first season, which is about bloody time considering it's what, season 9 now?
10.
Oh, whatever.
It's
somewhere.
9 in the UK, 10 in the rest of the world.
And it's just an insane amount of episodes, and I found out that my mother had some of the box sets, and he was, whoa, can we watch those then? You know, dig them out and we can watch them sometime. And so, been watching it, and I've been pleasantly surprised. It's kind of Buffy Files.
Buffy Files. So, how many box sets has.
Or Brophy. There we go. Yeah, Brophy.
How many box sets has your mum got?
I think something like the first five seasons, something like that. So, we've pretty much exhausted Netflix and, stuff like that. And there's been bugger all on TV lately. I mean, apart from Mondays, because we've got Walking Dead and Gotham.
Mm.
And Emily reminded me early on Twitter that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was on last week. So,
yep.
I said, I'll have to watch that. Put that on 4OD.
It's funny that you say, though, that this past week that you've watched the first half of the first season of Supernatural, because at the weekend, crazy as I am, having only watched it all for the first time this for the last few months, I decided to start rewatching it this weekend. But I did a
fangirl.
I decided to watch only certain episodes of the first season, so I actually managed to get through the first season in about a day.
So are those the episodes with Sam's top off? I know, I'm being cheeky.
Yeah. Yep. The sort of more overarching plot basically sort of episodes where the main story is kind of established.
Does it get more story arc-y later on?
Oh yeah. I mean, they still keep the Monster of the Week stuff going on because that's the nature of them and the role they sort of kind of go through in life as hunters. It's like,
yeah,
there's overarching stuff going on, but they're hunters and it's their job to deal with the nasty shit that goes bump in the night.
Because, I mean, the equivalent of obviously Supernatural was kind of Buffy, and in the later seasons it did kind of lose its Monster of the Week, or
to
focus.
To an extent.
Yeah, focus. Would you say it's still more focused on Monster of the Week than Buffy was?
No, I think they kind of level off.
Okay.
To the focus that they have.
It's bound to kind of happen, because the impression I've got of it, because I've not watched it, mostly because when it's been on TV, it's been like season 4 or season 5, and you go, well, why would I jump in now? Because I don't know how much of a story arc there is.
There's a lot.
So, yeah, it's just, I'm not, you know, having a look at that, because, you know, I'll either spoiler it when I intend to watch it, or not get what's going on.
When you get to the last few episodes of season 1, I can tell you now that a text they refer to in it, which doesn't sound like it should be a real thing, is in fact a real thing with everything that they mention in it.
Okay.
Yep. And that, when I found that out, I was like, huh, okay. Oh, and it still gets reprinted every now and then with various academic notes and stuff.
Okay. Speaking of Buffy, it's actually quite interesting the amount of actors and actresses that we've kind of seen in Buffy that's kind of come into things like Supernatural and whatnot.
In the later seasons.
Just in, one-off episodes and stuff.
Well, we already had Amy Acker, who played Fred in Angel.
Mm.
She was in an episode.
That was the one with the weird water.
Yeah, that was the lake one.
Yeah.
Which we were trying to work out if we've either seen the episode before or we've seen something very similar to it.
There's been weird stuff in the water in both Buffy and X-Files over the years, so...
And there was a slight bit of Grimm as well. Yeah, that was part of one of my ways of selling it to my missus with Supernatural, and he's like, well, I'm not sure about it. And yeah, but we watched Grimm. I said, oh yeah, fair. Yeah, that's a good point. If we watch Grimm, then it's not going to be worse than that, is it? And it's like, oh, it's better than Grimm by a fair margin. I think we just watch Grimm because it's on.
Yeah.
It's something on, and it's just, Grimm is just...
It's actually quite interesting, because there's a couple of things like Grimm and I think Once Upon a Time and stuff like that I'm aware that it's out there, and it kind of sounds slightly... It piques my interest tiny, tiny bit when, I see kind of an advert for it on TV, but it's not something I've actually sat down and watched.
Mm.
Well, let's see. My description of Grimm, if you were wanting to watch it, I'll sit you down and get, well, right, imagine Buffy, right, with demons living in, the real world, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. but sort of hidden. Now, take all the great characters from Buffy that, Joss Whedon is, famous for, so take all the characterizations out so that everyone's pretty two-dimensional and cardboardy. Take out the humor. Take out everything else that's interesting, and turn it into a occasionally we can show the special effect because we've got CG, but we only can afford to show it for a few seconds so that people will voke or, into whatever kind of creature they are, and it's always far less interesting than Buffy. Just watch Buffy. There we go. That's my sales pitch for Grimm. Watch Buffy. It's better.
Yeah. I think one thing I found with Supernatural over the seasons, and then comparing it to Buffy and Angel and a couple other sort of supernaturally series like Charmed and stuff, is that Supernatural takes its lore far more seriously. Like, it refers to accounts that are actually obviously been historically written in this kind of, in this world, you know, more. And it's just interesting how that kind of plays into it far more. Less of it's made up in the sense of it's based off of fictional, not fictional. You know how people used to believe in magic and they sometimes wrote about it? It's based off that shit a lot of the time. Yeah.
I mean, we've kind of discussed this concept, you know, in a previous episode before with, you know, the concept of, like, magic in, like, TV and whatnot. And it seems like they have actually done their research on that, which is quite nice. They're not making shit up for, you know, shits and giggles.
One of the things which surprised me from watching Supernatural is that it seemed to land surprisingly fully formed.
I suppose, well, because it came out, it started in, was it 2005, I want to say?
2005, 2004, something like that.
Yeah, so obviously you had you'd got already gotten over the awkward bits of Buffy. Awkward bit, well, Angel's kind of about as well. Charmed is just finishing and has somehow become a slightly coherent mess, but is still kind of a bit too ridiculous.
Wait, Charmed was a coherent... Serious?
A slightly coherent. Yeah, I wasn't saying it's fully coherent, okay, for pity's sake.
Yeah, I'm not in a rush to watch Charmed.
And yeah, so like there was a lot out there for Kripke and Co. to be like, well, this is what we don't want it to be like, and maybe we want it to be a bit like this. Basically. I would say that in terms of the mythology and the overarching arcs that kind of form throughout Supernatural and then go on into the later seasons, that it is perhaps far more formed and similar to what ends up happening in X-Files, basically.
Yeah.
I would say it's far more similar in overarching arcs, main plot points that carry out through on the seasons and all that. Yeah, so it's more like X-Files.
The big story things.
Yeah. That continue. Yeah.
So was it Brophy Files, I'll call it.
There is, in a later season, a slight parody episode of...
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I'm always wary of those, especially in a series like, you know, stuff like Farscape.
Supernatural has quite a few... weird, kooky episodes, but due to the nature of what it's dealing with, and sometimes when it is Monster of the Week, it kind of makes sense.
I mean, what do you mean by the Farscape thing? Do you mean like the one where Crichton gets hit on the head and everything becomes like half cartoon?
Yeah.
No, it's
not quite
bad.
Like that.
But to be fair, there is actually a Supernatural anime that takes place around, not season one, maybe... It's before season, but it's by no later than season 5.
But it's, I don't think it's necessarily part of the main canon.
No, it's just, there is an anime.
I've heard it exists. That's the limit of my knowledge. Oh, and thanks to seeing someone, I don't even think it was you, Emily.
Oh my gosh.
retweeting the bloke who plays, is it Sam, the college one?
Jared Padalecki. Yeah.
I'm talking about the character.
Sam.
Okay.
So, yeah. He's, as in, you know, the actors, but...
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah. The actors tweet, I got introduced to the word wincest.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like...
Well,
of course, that's going to...
That is a huge chunk of the fan fiction Supernatural community... Right there.
I mean, it's obviously it's kind of a bit icky, but by the same token, at least they can't procreate and produce like a offspring.
That's not the case in the fan fiction.
What?
There's After Dark insertion here.
Insertion? please do not say insertion.
I believe the correct. is MPreg.
MPEG.
MPreg.
JPEG.
Yeah, just no.
There are weird places on the internet. I mean, the government's worried about the terrorists, and I'm like, hmm.
Yeah, you ain't seen nothing. So what was it, Rule 34?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
oh, I know. It's just whenever there's anything like that, people are into it, there's going to be fan fiction. There's going to be deeply wrong fan fiction.
There's the slightly more acceptable end of it is where gay relationships are created between the non-related characters and stuff happens.
Well, I mean, I presume part of the appeal to Wincest is the fact that there is kind of this incest relationship. So, I mean, there have been stories about,
the Wincesters.
Incest with, boy and girl, and not so many with girl and girl, as in sisters.
Which is surprising, really, because the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, so I can kind of... Personally, I don't like to judge, and obviously it will never be canon.
But
live and let live.
I'm fine with it existing. I just find it funny.
You find it funny?
Yeah, it's just, oh, bless them. they can't just write a fan fiction about them, going to a shop.
Well, that stuff exists. Fluff exists. Don't worry.
I know.
There's
lots
of fluff.
Is that the entire story? Go to a shop.
Someone going to be writing slash fic.
Yeah. It's out there. Can't do anything about it. Paul, what have you been up to?
All right, are we...
Yeah, okay. I think we probably should.
Are we skipping the Elite bit?
Yeah, I've also been playing a bit of Elite, and I'm getting my millions back.
Slowly but surely.
Yeah, determined face. Determined to baby face.
Determined what face?
As in determined, like victorybaby.jpg.
All right, okay, yeah.
Yep.
That's
right. Another one was good.
Oh, that's such an epic picture.
Mind you, didn't stop me twanging myself on in front of a space station when I wasn't paying attention earlier today.
Do you still have a ship?
I still have a ship, yes, but I lost 120 tons of Imperial slaves.
That's a lot of Imperial slaves.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's okay. The Imperial slaves are the okay kind of slavery.
What? What?
In the game, they're described as people who pay off debts, so it's kind of a contract of work.
Oh, are you talking about indentured servitude?
Yeah, that's the okay kind.
Okay.
I'm going to shut up now.
So you were coming away from a meeting with the Lannisters?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Oh, I want to move myself. Paul, what have you been up to?
I'm just
going to keep digging myself a hole privately.
Yep.
I've been watching a series called Lie to Me, which I've kind of flicked past through on Netflix many a time and been like, that actually looks interesting. I don't really fancy watching it now, but that looks interesting. And I finally got around to watching it, and oh boy, is it good. Oh,
starring Thingy Bob, what's his face?
Tim Roth.
That's him, yes, yeah. That's what I said.
And he is very, very good in it.
With various appearances from... stars of minor roles across American TV series everywhere.
Well, like Mark Blucas, who played Riley, and he turned up in Castle that one time recently.
It's nice to know he's still getting work.
And even James Masters as well has turned up.
I hope he turned up with an English accent, because I can't hear him. I can't listen to him with the
unfortunately,
American accent.
He rarely has an English accent outside Buffy.
When he puts on that horrible fake American accent instead of his proper British one.
Are we claiming ownership over James Masters?
Oh, and his voice? I don't know. You might have something to say about that.
And like, Loki, you played Apollo.
Oh, yes.
In Galactica.
Yeah.
When he puts on that stupid fake British accent when he's on UK TV.
Can you give people the premise of...
Yeah. Lie to Me is basically about a guy who runs a company called Lightman Group who they specialize in detecting lies. They can kind of read facial tics and cues, micro expressions, and kind of voice patterns and stuff like that. And they get hired by loads of different organizations. So they're not just working with, like, say, for example, the cops or the FBI or, you know, this group or that group. They work all across the board. And they kind of take on cases ranging from kind of actual murders to kind of like, I think the latest one that that we watched was a kid that wanted to get back in touch with his biological father. It's just a brilliant series, and it's kind of working on the idea that was built in house with, like, Everybody Lies.
Hmm. But what I find is that it also tries to empiricize the stuff that Jane does in The Mentalist. Because reads people a lot, but it's not scientific. But in Lie to Me, they try to make it all scientific.
Absolutely. And despite the fact that, you know, this guy runs, his organization that kind of does this thing, he still lies. Everybody still lies, despite the fact that, you know, they can kind of detect when each other's lying, as it were, and whatnot. And, and it's basically just a kind of really kind of interesting kind of thing. Because they actually use real-world examples as well. So every now and again, you'll kind of get witness that was kind of caught in a lie, and then they will show examples of it, that same facial expression happening in real life as well. So I kind of feel like it's kind of teaching me how to kind of read people in a way. I've always been interested in kind of body language and kind of stuff like that, but this kind of takes it to a whole new level. And you know, they constantly kind of film interviews and whatnot where, you know, they can kind of rewind and kind of loop back, you know, certain facial expressions that was said at particular times and whatnot. And yeah, they basically get to the bottom of stuff by pretty much doing what L.A. Noire was hoping to do with their kind of system, which basically, obviously, detecting when people are telling lies.
Mm. And do you feel how much the show is actually sort of like based in reality? Would you say?
I would imagine quite a bit. I mean, that obviously is, you know, a case of people will turn around and say, but they're only kind of sitting that way or standing that way because they're comfortable that way. And it's like, yeah, but that's the reason that they are comfortable. And I'll move on to another thing that I've been playing recently. I've decided to buy Mario vs. Donkey Kong Tipping Stars. And that was because it was a cross-buy, so I could play it on the Wii U as well as the 3DS. And it's quite interesting. It's an interesting puzzle game where you have to guide like Mario, like a toy version of Mario, along with a couple of other toy versions of, you know, different characters in the series, to a specific location, and you kind of collect kind of coins and whatnot to increase your score, and you've basically got to manipulate the environment to get into the door at the top, while also making sure that you don't run into, you know, kind of enemies, and you don't run into spikes. And Emily, what have you been watching?
Well, other than, you know, rewatching Supernatural, I'm now on season 2, I'd like to point out, and I'm just watching most of the episodes as normal, though skipping the odd ones that I remember too well. Because they stood out too much, and aren't to be the main story. But anyway, I've enjoyed watching the return of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to UK screens in the last few days.
Ooh, after about to watch.
3 months of not being on the telly because Channel 4 couldn't be bothered to bring it back when the Americans had it come back.
So we're probably about, how many episodes behind?
We're a few episodes behind.
Like 4 or 5, something like that?
It's a bit annoying. It's having to avoid places on the internet again, and it's just
I thought that was the entire point of them, you know, showing them earlier on.
Absolutely. I mean,
when it came back,
but with this delay tactic, you know, it's it's actually very bad because, you know, people will pirate, people will, you know, kind of try and get around region blocking on, you know, websites and stuff. And, you know, people will post spoilers on the episodes that they've just watched. And, you know, fair enough, you know, they've just watched it. They want to talk about it and whatnot. But by the same token, some of us cannot legally watch it.
Yeah.
Yet.
But it was interesting watch, and I did enjoy watching the episodes, and, you know, I just brought back my Shield declassified analysis to Hex and did my sort of like five things that I loved and five things that I hated, and that's there. I think one thing that I particularly liked about the episode was the dude from Twin Peaks, I can't pronounce
Kyle MacLachlan.
That dude, his character, I liked how he was reacting to certain events in that episode. That was kind of cool. I also liked the introduction of potentially more people with stuff going on. Just saying. I don't want to spoil it too much. Mm. I think that is pretty much everything I've been up to, other than catching the bit of Lie to Me when you've had it on.
Yeah.
Basically. So yeah, so we said we had a feature and we were going to talk about video games and parents and kids, and I'm not sure if, I mean, you two have heard the news today, but dear listeners, have you heard the news that some heads at some Cheshire schools are threatening to report parents to the authorities if they discover their children have been playing 18 rated games? Ooh, some tough talk.
Because apparently being really stupid is a crime now.
Well, I think
I can only hope.
I mean, technically, you know, it's partially kind of illegal to, you know, sell 18 rated games to kids.
Yeah, direct to them, yeah.
Unfortunately, the law hasn't gone as far as perhaps being like, well, maybe we should make it like alcohol and tobacco, whereby if you buy it for someone and supply them with it, it's kind of illegal as well.
See, part of the problem with that is that obviously kind of tobacco and alcohol, they're, you know, they're designed to be consumed. Well, not designed to be consumed, but they are consumables. You know, once you drink it, it's gone. With a video game, you can buy it for yourself and then it's still like available for other people to play.
Yeah.
So I'm not entirely sure how they would necessarily go about doing that.
The simple fact of the matter is it doesn't help that parents don't set up the parental locks on their newfangled consoles that they bought for their kiddie winks.
It also doesn't help that parents themselves just, they buy, you know, stuff like Grand Theft Auto for their 12-year-old kid.
Yep.
And it's like,
baffles the hell out of me, but then I'm not a parent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't believe in media effects theory in that kind of respect, but by the same token, you do realise that they've got an age rating for a reason.
I mean, it's not that I think that kids are going to go out and, like, do things per se, but I do think it desensitises them a bit. Like, one conversation, and I brought it up before, but coming back from a birthday party of my little brother's the one time, and we were bringing back some of his friends in my parents' car, and just this conversation they started having about Modern Warfare, and it was just like, what the absolute utter fuck?
Bear in mind that this is, what, 10-year-olds?
No, this was younger. This was a couple of years ago, so they would have been like 8 and 7, and they'd been playing, it would have been the second Modern Warfare at that point. And yeah, it was just pretty disgusting hearing them talk about it, because it was like they didn't understand what they were playing, but then at the same time, that meant that they didn't think much of the violence that was happening. They thought it was kind of normalized for them in a way that it probably shouldn't have been.
That is just kind of that would be, what did you say, about 7?
Yeah, 7 or 8.
Yeah, that would be around about the age of my nephew. And it's like, no way would his parents allow him to, you know, play those.
No. I mean, I've heard the, you know, argument once again from, you know, parents that turn around and say, oh, well, if they don't have it, then they'll just go around their friend's house to play it. And it's like, well, just talk to their friend's parents then.
Yeah.
You know, refusing to allow your kid to go over to their house if they have that in, you know, as an option to do?
Yeah, would these be the same parents who would, you know, the slightest hint of something being in the news because of, such and such played Kill Zone, which was one, you know, a few years back now. It's like, ban them, because these things should be banned. It's like, no, that's your responsibility, you morons.
I would like to point out that, for accuracy's sake, that it probably wasn't Modern Warfare 2, but it was after Modern Warfare 2. It was a Call of Duty after Modern Warfare 2, and these kids, yeah, it was scary hearing them talk about this game.
I mean, what when you say it's scary, I mean, what kind of things?
The way they were treating, like, the like doing headshots and talking about the death that obviously happens in the game, and just to, like, sort of like almost like a for the lols attitude, but they're like 7 and 8. Why the fuck have they got a for the lols kind of attitude? You know, little sort of like 4chaners in the making or something. You almost sounded like, you know,
Jesus, that's horrible idea.
I mean, that I mean, the argument for actually restricting internet access to children would be, you know, 4chan is an argument for that, I would say.
I mean,
the longer you can keep them away from it, the better.
I mean, what's worrying is, you know, I mean, this is obviously just a random question that I'm throwing out here, but is there any connection between kind of violence and sex? I mean, presumably when they kind of grow up, are they going to be, are the people that, you know, have violence normalized, are they going to be the same people that would go on Twitter and, you know, make, you know, rape threats against people?
I think you'd have to play the game that normalizes that kind of sexual violence, either be it verbal or physical, like GTA. And the thing is, normalizes a kind of, yeah.
That doesn't really even normalize it, you know, anything like that. I think what does that are the net communities like, you know, the Chans.
Yeah,
that do that, where it's just, oh yeah, we could try and outdo each other, and everyone's anonymous, so it doesn't really matter, and it's for the lols. You know, if you get offended, then that's obviously your fault. When it comes to stuff like that, there's not a chance in hell that most of those parents wouldn't allow their kids to watch an 18-rated film that had that kind of content in. You know, sort of, you know, people being gunned down and headshotted, all that kind of thing. Most parents would just blanch at the idea of that. But when it comes to games, they're perfectly fine because, they've got them at school. They come back, their friends have got them at school, you know, asking for it. So, you know, why not?
I think part of the issue is, I mean, I don't understand it, because as a kid, I remember being told, no, I couldn't have stuff. Not that I was asking for hyper-violent content, like, as a kid, but I was told no a lot of the time, and I didn't really go off and sulk. I just was like, okay, I can't have that thing. I don't understand where we've got to a state where it seems to me, and I overhear these conversations whilst I'm shopping so much, obviously where I'm somewhere there's entertainment products like HMV or Argos or the local game game seller and stuff like that, and there's parents having conversation with their kids, and their kids are trying to proffer 18 rated games into the flipping basket, and it's like, you know, because they want it, and they're just whinging and whining for it. I'm like, why the fuck are parents giving into their kids so much these days? What the hell happened? I'm not talking about discipline, I'm just saying, why do parents give into the demands of kids so much these days?
Well, I've got a few friends. Well, you know, there's my nephew, so there's my sister-in-law and, you know, brother-in-law, and they've sort of sidestepped that because my nephew has a 3DS and they've got a Wii U for the house as well as a PS3. And so far as I know, he's not allowed on the PS3, but is, you know, he's on the Wii U. The problem there is that I can see this being an issue as he gets older. Most of the games that are the cool ones are not going to be on Wii U or 3DS. They're the, you know, the main console releases. Now, there are certain crossovers, like, you know, the FIFAs, because tragically he likes football, you know, and things like that. But yeah, I can see it being more of an issue as he's getting older. But yeah, they've kind of sort of sidestepped it that way. Whereas a mate of mine, he's got you know, kids almost approaching the teens now. And the issue he's got, because he's got he's got a PS4 and he had a 360 before that, and it was the constant battle with his kids that they wanted, you know, certain such games because they were the popular ones in school. But he said, you know, he had to end up being, you know, the nasty parent. Because he'd say, you know, no, there's no way you're playing that game. Go, yeah, but such and such a school's got it. I don't care. That's the problem, you know, with them.
But
yeah.
That, it does make me wonder to the larger problems reflected in our own British society these days, with people not talking to each other and parents not talking to each other and presenting a united front on issues like this.
Yeah, communication is an issue.
Well, there's, you know, the main problem, which is, you know, something I said just as we were starting to record, which is parents are stupid and kids are little bastards. And to shut the little bastards up, the parents, who most of the time they don't give a shit, just so long as the little bastard is shut up, will do whatever it takes to shut the little bastard up. So they'll buy them a Call of Duty because, after all, it's just a game, isn't it? What are those age ratings on? It's probably, you know, for show, or, you know, certain, because, you know, it's just a game. It's not a film. Because most of these parents don't game, which is part of the issue, really, isn't it? Because if you actually gamed, then there's no way in hell you'd let them play, you know, the Call of Duties, you know, all the stuff like that. And there's, my mate keeps complaining about all the restrictions placed on child accounts, that kind of thing, because after all, playing online is also part of the social life of kids these days. So they'll be wanting to play these games on Xbox Live or, you know, PSN. They'll be getting the same games machines that their friends will have. They'll be getting the same games or trying to get the same games that their friends have. And they'll be playing online and talking and, you know, doing all that kind of thing. And yeah, you can put the restrictions on. Yes, you can stop them playing the games, but then they've got the extra peer pressure of they can look at the friends list and see all their play, you know, all their mates are playing whatever game it is that they're not allowed because it's too old for them.
Yeah, it does actually make me wonder, because obviously there's on PS4 there's certain functions like being able to jump into like other people's games, and you don't necessarily have to have the disc for all of the functions in order to do that.
Yeah,
it does make me wonder whether there's any age restrictions on that kind of thing.
I think they work in the same way.
I think.
I mean, I don't have a PS4.
Yeah.
But I presume they do because they've always been relatively upfront about, you know, having restrictions on what software or, you know, access, you know, that kind of thing.
Just bringing this back to the original story that sparked this off, which is obviously there's this group of head teachers in Cheshire at various schools that are saying that basically they're taking a tough stance on pupils playing rated games. I mean, to international listeners, because we do have a few of you, UK school kids, pretty much, they're not going to be 18 at pretty much most of their educational career, not until
uni.
Well, I'll say uni. Wait, say uni. Well, further education, so sort of like, because we kind of go sixth form, which is from 16 to 18. They're still technically going to be underage, so it's not until anyone's in uni. Really,
though, by the time you get to sixth form, you're gonna be pretty much classed out.
Yeah,
fine.
But it's not so bad. I mean, it's also bad having, say, a 16-year-old playing 18-rated games. When you have friends of my little brother playing 18-rated games, it's just like, what the fuck?
It's like
it's wrong with parents.
Yeah, you know, teenage kids. It's a bit of a and ah. Personally, I would say it would depend entirely on what they're like.
Yeah.
Like I was allowed to watch things like Alien and Aliens when I was, you know, still in secondary school. So maybe about, you know, 13, 14, something like that. But it was a film by film basis.
Yeah.
My mum would watch them and then say, yeah, you can watch that.
Well, once I was a teenager, like, I was allowed to watch The Matrix before I was 15, but that was with my parents.
Yeah.
I was allowed to watch American Beauty before I was 18. But again, that was with my parents. And obviously I was over
think of one or two issues in that with watching with parents, but it's like
I know the nature of film, but at the same time it was the reason, because it was just when I was starting to really get into storytelling is something I wanted to do, and it had been nominated obviously for like Oscars and shit, and I was just like, well, why? And my parents were like, okay, we'll watch it with you.
I mean, there's a couple of things that are more that I want to say. Yeah. First of all, Game Theory did have an episode not too long ago that actually detailed how developers actually try and push controversy in order to, you know, push games. So games that are 18, yes, they may be a little bit bloody, but on the whole, a lot of them aren't necessarily, you know, gore everywhere and, you know, killing people, like mowing them down absolutely everywhere. And even when they are, they're kind of not necessarily done in a realistic way. And the second point that I wanted to go with is that surely the fact that these schools are threatening to report the parents to the authorities, all that would do is make the kids themselves not talk about it in front of teachers.
To an extent. So
kids aren't stupid.
Yeah, so you're basically gonna, you know, kind of push them into almost like a, you know, kind of hole of sorts. You know, a bit like what happens with, you know, kind of illegal.
But then again,
like drugs and stuff.
But then it's like this is the online age though, so they might be publicly boasting about stuff on Twitter or Facebook anyway, which then gets filtered back. I mean, when they say report to the authorities, I mean, it's kind of taking a tough stance on like recent law changes, which is like if you don't report, if you know that something's happening now to a kid, you don't report it, you will probably, I think you can get up to like a 5-year jail sentence, basically.
Yeah, which is fair enough. I mean,
and it's kind of taking a stance towards it with that. But at the same time, I can understand why head teachers are fed up with. And the thing is, I suspect that they probably did try talking to parents previously about this. Because I've known of a lot of schools trying that before. I think somebody did a letter campaign maybe last year or the year before last, where they were trying to persuade parents to stop letting their kids play 18-rated games. But the simple fact is that parents don't take action. Parents don't seem to start getting worried about things until it starts to affect them.
Yeah, absolutely. When there's kind of media reports on like a shooting or whatnot, that has been somehow linked to like a video game, whether it is or not, most likely not the cause of it. But, you know, in the end, it is the parents that do take the brunt of the responsibility, because it's not like those kids can go out to a shop and actually buy this by themselves.
I refer you to my comment before that parents are stupid and kids are little bastards. And what will happen with that is if head teachers say, or, you know, the teachers say, you know, got to have a talk about, you know, little Bob and Bobette are, you know, playing, you know, GTA 17. And that's bad because it's from the future for a start, which is, you know, freaking causality. But, you know, got to have an issue with that. I think a lot of parents will have a knee-jerk, what the hell are you doing telling me how to raise my kid? And you go, well, clearly you're incapable of doing it yourself properly, and that's why we're having to talk with you.
I
mean, in a whole examples of that, you know, like with these, you know, school fitness thing, or the, you know, get your kids out playing. It's like, no, the issues are, the numbers say that kids go out playing just as much as they always did anyway, but stupid parents are feeding them bad shit. And that's why they're getting fatter than, you know, they were, like, you know, a few decades ago. It's just, but you can't say that. So in this way, you can't tell parents that you shouldn't let your child play these games, because they'll just have an knee-jerk, how dare you?
But then I do find that if you tell parents that if you let your kid do this thing and you're going to either get fined or potentially end in court, they tend to be a bit less pro it. Like, I see, compared to, say, 15 years ago, when I'm out shopping these days, I see fewer suspiciously looking parental figures out buying Alco Pops in supermarkets since the law kind of became stricter on supplying.
Actually, come to think of it, the Alco Pops section in supermarkets has shrunk quite radically.
Yeah.
More spirits and beers.
Yeah, I think that's partially down to changes in the law about how if it's shown that you then supplied this to someone underage. And the same with like tobacco. I don't see as many kids these days touting for somebody to buy them baccy and shit. As much as, I mean, they still try it on occasionally, but as much as they used to, because adults are like, well, if I get shown you know, if somebody sees me doing this, and you know, I can get fined on the spot kind of thing. Yeah. And I think that the law as it stands at the moment for the sale of 18 rated video games and other visual media is such that it's the establishments doing the selling that gets in trouble at the moment, rather than the person doing the purchase.
Yeah.
I think that needs to be changed in the law there. If you're supplying that to an underage person, if we're so concerned about the this material and the effect that it might have on somebody who's underage, and that's why it's got this higher rating, and that's why they're not really meant to play it or view it, why is it therefore then the consequences of then supplying this product to the underage individual?
Well, I mean, talking as somebody who works in retail, it's not just the retailer that gets in trouble. It is the individual that both, you know, processed it on the till or handed it out. Yeah.
And the other thing is that I think actually I'm not sure how much of this is true, but I suspect the laws around pornography are a bit stricter. If you allow a child to watch porn that you've essentially supplied to them somehow, there's probably a good chance that you could get done for that, even obviously if it's not child, but it's just regular porn.
Yeah.
There's already laws set up for that, but it's just regular entertainment media that is still age restricted, but there's no.
That's the thing, you don't see parents kind of going into news agents and like getting their, you know, 10-year-old son, the top rated, you know, kind of loaded or anything like that.
I have to make with the observation there that, you know, the kids will be going, yeah, I've got no idea how these porn search terms turned up on my net, you know, my tablet or, you know, whatever.
I've got
absolutely no idea. It must have been hackers.
But then that's another thing, though, is like parents that don't try to sort of like lock down tech.
Part of the problem is that some parents don't know how to lock down tech because they're not tech savvy enough.
But then it's like, I hate how parents give kids stuff and they don't know enough about the thing that they're giving to them. And it's just like, oh.
I mean, in my opinion, parents should know more about, especially stuff that connects to the internet, than the child should.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that surely that's basically just logical.
I've got a few mates who are, you know, like their kids' nightmares in comparison with, you know, their friends' parents. Their friends' parents know jack shit about the technology and it's just idiot. Oh, yeah, mum and dad, if you give me that, there's no way it can access anything dodgy, you know, because it's all locked down, you know, by default. Give me that. Yes! Ha ha! And then, of course, you know, a few, you know, friends, when they get tech in the house, the first thing they do is, you know, will think, well, you know, my kid's only about 11 or something like that. Parental controls!
Yeah.
Well, and they're, you know, yes, we'll look up. No!
Oh, what annoys me is that my parents keep talking about trying to buy, I mean, my littlest brother's going to be 11 this year, but buying him a mobile phone. I know it's normal, apparently, for kids that age to have mobile phones these days, but do you know what that comes with these days? It comes with freaking text bullying or instant message bullying and obviously a gateway to porn and other crap. And it's just like, it's so that we can ring up when, so we know where he is when he's somewhere in the village. It's a small village.
Buy him a cheap, shitty $2.99 phone from Tesco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you can buy, and they are coloured. They don't have cameras. They're not smartphones. Yeah. They are a phone.
Yeah.
That would be a sensible option, actually, because, you know, smartphones, that they can do so much, and they can actually let in so much damage.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just the way they keep talking about it. It's like, yes, you'll know where he is, but you're opening him to far more danger than he already was in.
Yeah,
I refer you to my aforementioned, you know, kids are little bastards.
Josh doesn't want the phone. It's for my parents' peace of mind.
I'd say I can understand that, but yeah, what I would do is, you know, definitely like a basic phone. Yeah. Which you can do texting with, and, you know, you can get, it's like when I bought my contract, and it was something like, we'll give you 3,000 text messages. And I just looked at her. Is it, why the hell would I need 3,000 messages a month? Yeah. You know, so I could spell things out a letter at a time.
I think one thing about...
Two Mexican waves down screens.
I think one thing about mobile phones now is because they're so personal as well. You know, every person has one. It's an individual kind of thing. That we're kind of uncomfortable with having our phones looked at by other people. Mm. It's like if parents were actually, you know, kind of monitoring and, you know, getting their child's phone and just checking every now and again to make sure that, you know, there's no messages on there, of, you know, bullying or no, you know, attempts at, you know, sexting or anything like that.
I mean, the thing, I'm just thinking now, the stuff that parents could do with a mobile phone should terrify kids. Because not only will there be able to, you know, there's all these things, like you could have, you know, any of those GPS locator apps. So you could see precise, you know, Bob, yeah, are you at Darren's tonight?
Yeah.
No, you're not, you little bastard, come back here. Yeah, all of those things. It's just, oh, yeah, you don't want a smartphone because your parents will, you know, your parents, if they've got any sense, will be able to check up on you.
Mm.
If they even suspect any, you know, you're doing something which they don't want you to. Mm. And I've got past, you know, past a certain age, obviously, privacy. But until then, no.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, getting back to this idea of, you know, kind of video games and why the age restrictions...
shock horror, parental responsibility.
Yeah. Mm. But, and why, you know, age restriction kind of does occur and whatnot. And, you know, we've kind of talked about, you know, how kids will try and play video games that their friends have got and whatnot. And it's, you know, obviously we're not saying that, you know, media effects theory is right and that, you know, oh, if a kid of 12 plays a video game of 18, then he's going to become a sociopath and go around killing people. That's not what we're saying.
That most of the studies that have looked at it properly, it's not that stuff will get enacted. It's the fact that they react less to seeing negative things in
real life. It's a slight desensitization. And, you know, I think everyone would agree that when it comes to, you know, little kids, like, you know, 7, 8, 9, you know, that kind of thing, you know, well, you know, preteen, you don't want them playing stuff which is 18 or adult rated.
Yeah.
But also they tend to get a bit more aggressive in that.
Yes.
And that's one of the things the head teacher said, is that, look, them playing these, the kids that play these games do tend to be more aggressive in the playground, tend to be nastier.
I think
they're not going to shit up the school, but they're unpleasant as individuals.
I think that's more of a, if there's anything put in front of them, kids will, you know, tend to ape it. Because I remember, you know, being an old bastard. you know, martial arts films and karate films were, you know, quite big in the playground when I was growing up. And, you know, there was this whole thing of, oh, no, don't let them watch this because, you know, they're copying the moves. It's like, yeah, but then a few years later, they were copying the moves from wrestling. So it's, you know, it's on Power Rangers, you know, after that. So kids are going to, you know, ape the, you know, the kind of thing. And again, it's not the whatever it is corrupting them. It's just because they're impressionable little sods. But when it comes to, you know, the actual adult stuff, yeah, you know, keep it away from them, you know, until they're, you know, a little bit more responsible, they can process it a little bit properly, put it in, you know, a bit more context rather than, oh, I'm shooting everyone in the head, lol. And something I would love to know, and the answer would probably be money or time. When it comes to things like Call of Duty, they must know that so many of their audience are going to be, you know, younger than the age rating that's put on the box. So why don't they have, like, paintball modes? You know, that are triggered by having, you know, the age ratings. So if it's booted up on a machine that says, you know, the person, you know, or, you know, the online account says this person is, you know, 12, then, yeah, have a paintball mode so they can still play the game with their mates.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a bit like Mortal Kombat. You know, Mortal Kombat originally, like on the SNES version, they kind of replaced the blood with kind of sweat.
Yeah,
kind of, it was still kind of you know, kind of watery, and on believe that on the Mega Drive, there wasn't anywhere near as much blood unless you did a cheat.
Yes,
in order to, you know, some kind of do
a
it.
A lot of them did that. It's like it wouldn't be the first time that a game had, you know, like green blood, or, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, come on, there's, you know, precedent for this. And I'm thinking of GoldenEye on the N64 as well. That didn't have an age rating thing as such, but you could turn on
paintball mode.
And that was a lot of fun because you got paintball in colours all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it actually, you know, affected the wall as well, rather than just, kind of bullet holes.
It didn't take away from the game. And if the little bastards are going to be playing the games anyway, no matter what you do, then, if you have the age ratings on the online profiles, go for that.
Yeah.
There we go. I claim my £5.
I think that's all we've got time for this week, I'm afraid.
You're going to say that.
Yeah. So it is goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's goodnight from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter @EK6891. You go find Nerd Assemble over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. Yeah, yeah. Ability to talk, diminishing. We're also available on iTunes and Stitcher. You can find us on Twitter @NerdsPodcast. We're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerd Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to check out HexDimension.com. Where, as I've said, you can read about what I loved and hated in the latest edition of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Key analysis there. Plenty of spoilers. So watch the episode first before reading it.
Fair enough.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.